It's time for a legislative hotline. And Jason, this week we have 7th District State Senator Shelley Short joining us.
Yeah. Good morning, Senator Short. How are you doing?
Good. Good morning.
Yeah. Okay. You're in Olympia. Of course, you were telling us one time that you only have back home once a month. And so that's the issue. Mountain Pass, right now there's a wreck. You can't get on I-90. If you're coming this way on I-90, there was an overnight fatality wreck. You couldn't get here. But normally, you know, about now is when the mountain passes start to get better. So maybe it'll get better for you. But of course, next month, you'll be done with the legislature on the 105-day session. I wanted to talk about a couple of bills that passed the Senate. It's kind of interesting because you both are East Side Republicans. I'm talking about in this district, this area right here that serves here, 12th District, Senator Brad Hawkins, and of course you in the 7th District, right, in Douglas County as of redistricting. Now, one of them was the penalty for drug possession. He voted yay, and you voted nay. Kind of go into your reasons for why you were a no vote on that bill that passed out of the Senate.
Well, I think when I am glad that the bill is advancing. You know, I consider them, and probably Senator Hawkins would too, without putting words in his mouth, kind of half steps toward progress, right? We've got to continue to make up ground because what we've essentially had is decriminalization of drugs. We're seeing it play out in our streets, in our communities, and it's not safe. And for folks that are languishing with, you know, just challenges with drug use and addiction, it doesn't help them either. And so, you know, my frustration with the bill is, look, it sets it up as a gross misdemeanor, but it still gives, it's weak when you tie treatment to, you know, what's the responsibility of the person doing drugs. We want to make sure that there's a clear path. So if you're not going to do the programs, you essentially would do jail time. And so the bill's getting better. I mean, quite frankly, I could have voted either way. And I don't mean that it's not a big issue. I do think there are reasons for or against. But the challenge, and this is when it gets into more of the political reality, you know, this bill is going to go to the House. And so strategically, if we had more Republicans voting for this bill and less Democrats, that would send the wrong signal to the House. Democrats are in control in both chambers. And I know that sounds just totally bizarre. But the reality is we want to show that it's extremely bipartisan. But to have, let's just say, all Republicans and some Democrats, you know, voting, and the bill passes because it has a majority of the votes, you know, that's going to send the wrong signal to the House. And that's just part of the political nature.
Yeah.
It goes beyond the policy itself and into how do we give the best chance for this bill to continue through the process.
Yeah, you know, what strikes me about that is I think you have Democrats voting against that. Really, you said decriminalization. They're probably for just decriminalization and nothing else. And then you have Republicans who voted no, like you, for more maybe like Senator Patton. He had an amendment to make simple fentanyl possession a felony.
Yes.
And you have some people on the Republicans that wanted to go even further than what the bill did. So I found that kind of a fascinating, interesting juxtaposition there with that.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. There are a number. This was a very difficult issue for my Democratic colleagues because of just what you said. There are some that believe there should never be any kind of penalty for drug possession. And, you know, at the end of the day, that doesn't help those that are languishing, you know, with drug addiction. I have a niece and a nephew who struggle with drug addiction, and you see how it affects their families and how hard it is to break that cycle. You know, decriminalization does not break that cycle. But I'm hoping, look, I want these people to get help, but you've got to do kind of a hard encouragement, if you will. It's very difficult. Treatment's very difficult. Those addictions are very strong. And so I think the bill lacked the strength that I'm hoping the House may take up. But if it gets passed in the House, there's probably some changes. We'll probably have another chance to vote on it.
Okay. Now, police pursuits, again, that was even tighter.
It was.
Yeah, 26-23, Hawkins voting yay, and you also voting nay. So go into that for half a second.
Well, just, you know, auto thefts are up 50%. So, but the reasonable suspicion, the standard that our police officers used to have for pursuit, auto thefts aren't included, but the bigger one is reckless driving. So if you look at the terrible case in Sunnyside a couple of weeks ago where those two young kids were killed, you know, law enforcement had no opportunity. Their hands were tied. And so I think, again, of a very weak bill, again, better than nothing. I mean, I certainly wouldn't have wanted to see the bill die. It goes to the House, but much the same reasons that I just shared on the other bill. You can't have so many Republicans voting with some Democrats that gives the wrong message to the Democratic leaders in the House.
Right. Okay. Just another, again, a fascinating thing, but the 26-23 split on that bill with police pursuits. And, of course, it was kind of held up, or kind of changed, I guess, on the floor by Senator Dingra, who put up the threshold there of some of them would be okay. Some pursuits were okay, others were not okay. And this is a bill from a Democrat, Senator Lubick, who was a longtime state trooper as well, state patrol trooper. So
and you think about that, because Senator Lubick had that bill right at the beginning of session, and the same senator who put up the changes on his bill on the floor the last day is the same senator who refused to hear his bill. You know, and she said absolutely she would continue to put her foot on it. When the House Democratic leadership, who initially we thought was going to allow their bill to come over to the Senate, all of a sudden changed positions. And you know, I give Senate Democratic leadership a lot of credibility on the issue. They pulled that bill, Senate Bill 5352, John Lubick's bill, and they pulled it to the floor, and her amendatory language was what we voted on. But I just thought that was an interesting play, given that she didn't want to ever hear his bill.
Yeah, and so I guess it was a compromise on her side for doing that, but putting some brakes on what the bill was going to do as far as allowing the police pursuits. Now, let's talk about the House bill that you're going to be looking at. It's going to be the assault weapons ban on sales. You'll be looking at the House passed that right at the last second, right at the deadline there. So what do you expect to happen with that bill as it comes to the Senate?
It's just a very scary one. You know, I think law-abiding citizens aren't the problem. They've never been the problem. You know, people are, but they have this fixation on the weapon itself. You know, the weapon itself's not the problem. It's the person using the weapon. And the problem I see, they're not dealing with crime. You know, again, we just talked about two bills on drug possession and police pursuits. You know, it continues to make it harder and harder to hold criminals accountable. In fact, there was a bill coming from the House that actually, where you have greater sentences, enhanced sentences for criminals who commit violent crime with firearms, that would take that away. So I'm like, where are you going with this? And so the frustration is they don't want to deal with all of the real crime issues involving firearms, but they want to go after law-abiding citizens. So the bill, interestingly, has yet to be heard. Now, we have a couple of weeks yet before the end of the next deadline. It'll be really interesting to see if it comes up for a hearing. I think it will. It's going to be a hard one to stop, but we're going to put up a fight. It's going to be a long one on the floor if it gets there.
Well, you know, Democrats have tried to do this for several years now, and finally I passed the House, and it was at the last minute when they did that. So there's some drama, I guess, with that bill. You also wanted to talk about some of the stuff that's coming your way from the House, and you particularly had your eye on House Bill 1181, and again, not for good reason.
Well, and it's just super frustrating. So we have seen a lot of very good bipartisan measures this session to give tools to builders and to homeowners and communities to build housing, to make sure that there are housing available for folks to live at all price points, right? This bill is going to frustrate all of that. So if you think of land use and the fact that that is a huge piece of the puzzle when it comes to the cost of housing and where you can even build, this bill is going to make it more expensive. This bill is going to make it harder. So if you're a local government doing your comprehensive land use planning, you, under this bill, will now be mandated to deal with climate change climate resiliency, vehicle miles traveled, transportation elements, and the bigger piece of it is they're all appealable. So a group like FutureWise, who is usually one of the groups that does it, they'll decide that they don't like how a county's done that. And so then they will go ahead and appeal it. It goes to the Growth Management Hearings Board. I've had some of my counties in going back and forth for years. Spokane County's one, Stevens County's one. Look, if this were an effort where the county could go to Commerce and say, hey, help us, you know, help us with this, you know, and they are developing guidance, by the way. If the county used that guidance, then it shouldn't be appealable anymore. That should be a safe harbor from appeal, you know, giving counties options to do that. But instead, it says, well, you can still use Commerce's information to develop your work, but if we still don't like it, we're still going to appeal. And that doesn't create any certainty in our communities.
Okay, now where would the appeal come from? I'm unclear. Could it come from anybody or
anybody.
Okay.
Anybody. See, the original act allows third-party appeal or litigation. So that can come from someone who lives in the district. It can come from a person. It can come from a group. It doesn't have to be people within your community. And FutureWise is one of those groups that believes it's its mission to determine what land use policies and practices should be in all of our communities across the state of Washington. Look, I sit down with FutureWise regularly. You know, they're a part of the stakeholders on all of these issues. We have a difference of opinion, pretty big one, but they are integrally involved in these issues. And it's just, that was never the intent. We want counties to do, you know, thoughtful growth planning, thoughtful where are you going to put your facilities, how are you going to do your water and sewer and transportation and all of that. We should allow them to do that without the overhang threat of appeal.
All right, and finally here, just about a minute left.
Sure.
We've had some bills that have gone beyond the Senate. They're going to be in the House. I'm sure you're going to be testifying in the House on some of your own bills. Tell us about that briefly.
So I already have. Of the six bills that I have alive still in the process, I've testified on four of them, and I have two more coming up next week, and two of them are dealing with smaller cities, growth management, allowing some flexibility and getting rid of some duplicative policymaking, still protecting the environment, still protecting the planning process, but I'm excited that the bills are still making their way through the process.
Were you ever in the House yourself?
I was. I served in the House from 2009 to 2016.
So did you see some of your colleagues that are still there in the House that you go say hello to when you're doing this sort of thing?
I do, but gosh, there's been a lot of turnover since I've been in the House. There are a lot of new faces.
Yeah, okay. All right, great. So, Shelley Short, it's the 7th District Senator. We will talk to you again in a couple of weeks as we go through the session and go into March and into April, making progress there. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Legislative Hotline.
Thank you so much, Jason. You take care.